It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
All right, we're gonna stop.
Podcast. No, I was rubbing people's noses. Oh, I don't even have it on. I've got a new sun hat, and I wore it to work on Monday to break it in. Mostly just to rub it in people's faces that I was going somewhere that I was going to need a sun hat. But now, yeah, it looks like spring's going to basically start when we leave. So y'all got to have this snow crap taken care of by the time we get back.
I guess so.
I've got to get up to like 60 at some point next week, though, so we should be good. Now, where I'm going is going to be around 80, 85, so... Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world specifically created as a cautionary tale for those of you thinking of doing a podcast. Because remember, no matter what you do, it could end up like this.
So don't do it.
Yeah. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 207. No, I'm sorry. Last episode was 208.
208. And 209, although there'll be a gap in between of about a week. But not for us, because we're going to record them today, because I'm not going to be here next week.
Nope.
And William is going to be responsible for the publishing, so if it doesn't happen, you know whose fault it is. For those of you just joining us for the first time, most of that probably made no sense to you. Here's the deal. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And by the way, people, you need to be writing that email address, because good people do write that email address, and our show depends on that email address. So y'all, even if you've already done it, do it again. Write that email address with little things, comments, topics, questions, stuff like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's e-business servants. Email server. I don't know. I'm running out of E's. What's the...
We reach into that.
What's the adjective form of eschaton? Estastic. We reach into the hat at random, draw them out, the little note cards, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. And today we're going to do a show, and then we're going to compile it into a useful file, and then we're going to do another show. And actually, this is Wednesday. So this you won't hear till tomorrow, even if you're an early weekly adopter. Or whatever. This won't be out till tomorrow. And then the next one won't be out for another week. But, I will say this. This is the same time of day that we normally record.
Yep.
And it's still light out.
Yep.
It's not going to stick around real long. It'll probably be dark by the time we finish this first episode. But still, we're making progress. And Ezzy's really interested.
She doesn't even notice it's a day earlier than usual.
So, it's been a couple weeks...
Has it? Oh.
Yeah. Yes. So how have your couple weeks gone?
Okay, I guess. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you about was...
yes.
Okay, so you're... Let's say you're playing a video game.
Let's say I'm playing a video game.
And this is a video game...
This is a video
that,
game.
That... You get, sometimes there's updates for patches and stuff.
Oh, yes.
And let's say either you just go ahead and install the patch, you never really pay attention, or it does it automatically.
Which is what happens okay. with me.
All right, so, this video game, when you got it, was kind of buggy.
Yes.
And, you know, it's the typical bugs that you get in a video game. You've got the kind that are cosmetic, like, you know, when people are walking through walls and doing strange things, yes. Which can be kind of humorous, but they're a little annoying.
Bethesda creepy, jittering corpses.
Yeah,
yes.
A little annoying. Then you've got the ones that really get in the way of good gameplay. Or that,
like when your assassin gets into a haystack and can't ever get out?
Like that, or let's say you've done everything to achieve a certain trophy and the trophy doesn't materialize.
Yes.
Something like that. And then you get the ones that are kind of helpful, right?
Mm.
Usually the ones that help you duplicate inventory items or increase yes. your gold.
Those are often not called bugs. They're called exploits.
Yes, that is what they're called. All right, so imagine that you are the people who've actually made the game.
I am the people who've actually made the game.
And you're going to prioritize which of these things you're going to fix. Now, set aside the ones that are really easy, because you're probably going to dedicate one whole team just to quick, easy fixes, just so
yes.
just because you can.
Yes.
So set those aside. The fixes that are reasonably difficult to do, of those three categories, where some are completely cosmetic and a little bit annoying, but also a little bit humorous, the exploits, as you called them, or the things that really bother you as a gamer.
Well, William,
which would you put at the top of your priority list?
I believe, absolutely, I would put the game-breaky ones first, because those are the ones that really harm the experience for our customer.
That's what you'd think. We happen to be playing a game that is absolutely in all the categories I'm talking about. And, you know, we just let the updates go automatically. Yeah. And
they patched up an exploit, didn't they?
Well, not only did they patch up an exploit, it's a little more involved than that. I went back to see if I could find the notes on the patches that are fixed.
Yeah.
And most of them are exploits.
Yep.
And meanwhile, this is a game it's got some significant play, but like there are quests that you can't finish, there are trophies you can't get.
Yep.
But I look at the patch list, and it's a lot of it. They're fixing the exploits, and some of the cosmetic things too. But yet the gameplay problems are all still there.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering why, because
I've seen this a lot.
Now, if the exploit is that a certain boss is just really easy to defeat, I can understand you wanting to fix that right away, because that's embarrassing, and it is a little... to me, that actually affects gameplay, because I know a lot of people would just like to mow down the bosses, but, you know, it is part of the game to face something really
but
tough.
But things like the alchemy hack in Skyrim.
Sure, or something...
Where you have to really work elaborately to get things to change, so you pretty much have to be deciding... Like, it has to be a very conscious decision. The exploit's not going to get in anybody's way.
Or happen accidentally.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, you know, if you don't want to cheat, you don't have to cheat. And exactly. if you do, and in our house, the other adult in the house who likes to play these games, she actually doesn't enjoy cheating very much. But sometimes, especially when she's playing a game that's got some bugs in it that degrade the gameplay in other ways, it seems like only fair.
And you can circumvent them sometimes.
Yeah, once in a while you get to, you know, I'm not going to spend 3 hours to do this. I'm just going to do this little cheat so I can do
and
it right now.
And if crafting is bugged, maybe I use item duplication.
Yeah, right.
I've seen this many times, and I don't have an answer for it, but this happens. Exploits will get fixed while there are still huge game-breaky things. The only thing I can, if I'm trying to defend them in this, which I'm not, but I mean, this is the only thing I can come up with anybody to defend them, is perhaps there's something behind the scenes that we don't know, that in general, these exploits are way easier to fix than the game-breaky things. And
yeah,
so it's like, we can do it, it's not a real use of the resources,
right.
So let's just get
that's
it out
why
of
I, that's why I mentioned that at the front end. Also,
but it seems
it could be that some of these exploits are connected to other things that are broken, and they get... And they can
possibly get
fixed kind of on the way.
But
it just seems like so many of the exploits are getting fixed, while so many of the other things aren't getting fixed.
And
that it seems like
over a lot of games.
Yeah, it seems like they're just putting a higher priority on those for some reason, but I don't understand why. Like,
me
what
either.
Again, if you've got a boss that's going down too easy, I can understand fixing that. But like you said, something that's you would never stumble on it accidentally. It doesn't have to, it's never going to be part of your gameplay unless you want it to be. And it's not hurting anything. What's the big deal?
I will say this. My guess, just based on personal experiences as a gamer, is that at least once you fix the ones that keep it unplayable, once you've gotten those out of the way, so that people, because there are sometimes there are games so buggy that just nobody will play it.
Yeah.
And you know, Assassin's Creed Unity, which I referenced earlier, was like that in the beginning. And then they got the bits fixed so that it's a functional game now. But other than that, I feel like bugs and bug fixes and exploit fixes don't have a significant impact on the market. I don't think in general they have a significant impact on whether or not somebody buys a game or doesn't buy a game. And as long as that's the case, then who the hell knows how they're making their decisions. And however they're doing it, even if it's just ass backwards, they're not feeling the backlash of it. Well, because you can't go up based on, are people on the internet complaining about it? Because that's going to happen absolutely no matter what. And if your sales aren't going down, then you don't worry about it.
Right, but all that might be true, but you know, every workplace has to prioritize its tasks.
Absolutely.
And if you're going to fix things on the game at all, you have to prioritize the fixes, and that prioritization has to be based on something.
Yes.
And if any of those game problems are going to impact the market for the game, whether or not they do, if any of them could potentially, it's going to be the ones that really have
absolutely
hinder the person's gameplay. Absolutely. So you'd think those would be the top ones.
I would. And what I'm saying, though, is that in their case, their decision-making may have been an elaborate version of strip, rock, paper, scissors that they played at the Christmas party. And if they're not feeling the market blowback, they're not going to bother to change
it. I suppose.
I'm not saying they're not idiots.
Well,
I'm just saying, in general, with those things, I think they have to be trained.
I don't think it's so much a matter of them being idiots. I think what's going on here is, I think that pride is probably at work here. Like,
that
we,
could definitely
we
be
can't
a thing.
Let, you know, we, this isn't how we intended for this to be. We can't let people cheat on our game.
Absolutely.
And that makes, that matters to them a lot more than whether or not people are not getting a certain trophy or they can't discover
and,
a certain,
you know, it's weird because if bugs really object. Mattered, Bethesda would not be a successful game company. They just full on would not.
Well, now,
be.
My experience in reading game reviews, though, is that bugginess of a game does affect reviews, and I can't imagine that it doesn't affect who buys the game, or at least affects who's going to buy the next game, or how quickly
possibly,
they'll buy it.
Possibly, except Assassin's Creed seem to be disproving that all over the place, because they've always been pretty buggy. Well, and again, and Bethesda.
Yeah.
Nobody's like, I'm not going to buy Fallout 4 because New Vegas was so buggy. Like, that's not happening.
Well, of course, there's a lot of exceptions. Like, you know, New Vegas wasn't
was a different company and stuff. Yeah. But, I mean, even then.
Yeah.
Even if Fallout 4 was made by the same people who did New Vegas, people aren't going to be like, oh, I'm not buying that.
Well, but and then it kind of depends on the game. Because, remember, Dragon Age 2 was not well received for a lot of reasons. So,
but I don't think that hurt Inquisition sales.
Well, no. Especially, but
and actually, I'm not even sure how much that hurt Dragon Age 2 sales, sadly.
But Dragon Age Inquisition had some really good marketing. I mean,
yes.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff ahead of that release that got people really excited.
And Dragon Age Origins was good enough to overcome a not that great Dragon Age 2. And to be honest, Dragon Age 2 wasn't terrible. It was a step down from the first one, which is not how you should ever go.
No. We liked it, actually. But
I enjoyed it, but I didn't enjoy it as much as Origins.
But, and let me think of another game, well, anyway, it just depends on the game a little bit.
Yeah,
what's being released and whether or not it's buggy and all that stuff. So,
and also, this is where I get the benefit of being a late adopter to things. Because by the time I get there, they've fixed it, or it's just unplayable. Like,
yeah, but you were talking about some exploits in Skyrim.
Skyrim. Then they never fixed that one. But to be fair, that was one that took me like an entire after all the reading I did, which was not insignificant. It took me like a day of experimentation to finally get that one right.
That's true.
That the alchemy exploit. I kept wondering because there are other exploits in Elder Scrolls. There were some tricks with item duplication. There were some tricks. There was a weird trick where you could. In Oblivion, where you could like stick a paintbrush into something and then you could stand on it so you could get like higher up, and they patched those.
Huh.
But yeah, they never patched the alchemy one because it's just, it's really, you can't do it on accident. Like, it's really involved. And I mean, and it can make you into a god, which is what it did with me, but you really, you have to decide this is what I'm going to do. And I don't think they ever patched. Oblivion had 100% chameleon you could do. You could enchant stuff with chameleon, which is basically invisible, except you can still interact with stuff. And you could enchant enough things that you could get 100%, and then people just couldn't ever see you.
Oh, I thought you, that was okay. Like you were.
No, it breaks the fuck out of the game.
Oh, okay.
Because there were certain scripted things that sometimes would happen regardless. Like, even though they shouldn't be able to see you, they suddenly start talking to you. And other ones that didn't happen, that, like, the quest can't happen. Like the whole thing doesn't work unless that happens.
Well, anyway, even
Skyrim had weird ones.
We ran into that this weekend. I was curious what you thought of that. Because I just thought it was really interesting that they would do that. I'm guessing it's a pride thing. But that seems like a weird way to run your... your QA department. But
pride goeth before the patch.
But so how was your 2 weeks?
I'm trying to remember. In general, it was not great. But I haven't been here since GammaCon, have I?
No.
I didn't talk about GammaCon.
We didn't go. This was the first year we even thought of going. But,
yeah.
We couldn't because, well, we kind of could have. But the thing is, you know, my birthday was... Saturday, a few Saturdays ago, but I didn't go home that weekend, and we went home the next weekend, and GammaCon was that weekend. But I mean, I wasn't home the whole weekend, so I guess I could have gone like on a Sunday or something. But
well, I only went for the slots that I go to because that's sort of how I am. Cons are yet another one of those things that like sound cool in my mind, and I don't really enjoy them because it's. Here's the thing: I go to GammaCon for three reasons. One. Is to try out new games that I'm interested in possibly using. You know, makes sense. Two is to actually play games instead of running them. And three is to remind myself why I work with a closed group of friends and don't play with other people or publicly or things like that.
Because it's an unpleasant experience?
Because there's always shit that I don't... There's always somebody at the table that pisses me off.
Oh.
There's always somebody at the table who's clearly not getting it. There's always something... I played in two games the whole time. One was late Friday night. It was just a two-hour game, like, right before the end of the night, like 10 to 12 at night. That was run by a friend of some members of my gaming group, Tasha. Tasha Robinson, who some of you may know as former writer of the AV Club and current writer of the Dissolve. She is a pop culture e-journalist. That I was a big fan of, and it took me many years to figure out that my friend's friend Tosh was the same person. Tasha was the same person that they were that I had been reading about. But so I played in her game, and that was fun. It was a very indie sort of game. Like we had very bare bones information about the situation and about the characters, and then it was sort of a round robin GMing each scene, and things would sort of go from there. About finding an undersea pyramid in the near future. That was kind of fun, but we had a guy at the table. He was really the only guy we didn't know. It was me, the two people from my gaming group, another friend of theirs who I knew from a couple of parties and things, who, to be fair, was kind of drunk, and she was a little bit problematic, but only a little bit. And then Tasha, and then this guy that nobody knew, who... I feel like this guy has some social issues... And I feel like this is one of the few times he gets to go out. And so I don't wish him any ill will.
There are a lot of people who would not be surprised you met a person like that.
Yes. because
a function like this.
Well, and to give you an example, we roll dice, and I've done this many times. You come to a decision in the game that's not something there's a mechanic for. It's not something like, oh, you roll to see if you do this. It's something, well, would your character do that? And you're like, I don't really know. So you take a die, and you're like, okay, 4 and under, they would, and 5 and over, they wouldn't. I've done this. Many times I've done this.
Why not?
Yes. It's not uncommon. I think a lot of you out there, gamers, will be familiar with this situation. You're like, I'm not sure. I'll come up with a little game in my own head to roll to determine. Or sometimes it's even random. Like, is there something there or not? Well, I don't know. Let's find out. Well, yes, there is. And this guy was doing this a couple times. Okay. And I saw it. And I didn't think anything of it. The GM, Tasha, saw it and didn't realize she hadn't been paying enough attention or whatever. So she asked something, and he rolled a die and answered. And she's like, why are you rolling that die? And he turned to her. And then he stood up, and he took his laptop, which he had, and he took 2 steps away from the game, and then came right back, sat back down, and basically had a panic attack. And, like, freaked out on it, and was, like, you know, sometimes my brain needs help to work through this stuff, and I just I appreciate it if you just let me do that. And then we all had to stay quiet for 10 seconds while he calmed down. It was very weird. And on top of that, when he was playing, he was just coming up with the wackiest, silliest things. And by the end, he had his own weird game of his character. Is my character awake? Is my character worse? It was just odd. And, I mean, I wish him well, but it annoyed the hell out of me.
Very interesting, yeah. Actually.
And then the second game...
I mean, I'm sorry it annoyed you, but
yeah.
Like you said, he clearly has some...
And I mean, I saw him a great deal later. I think he had a great time overall.
Well, that's
good. And in general, I'm not sad about the experience, but I was really hoping he wasn't going to be in my other game. And he wasn't. Weirdly, the other game was run by a member of my group, and it consisted of a bunch of people. Tasha was there, my friend's wife was there, some other friend who I didn't know was there, and then 2 people who none of us knew. Oh, sorry. There was yet a different friend who I didn't know, and then 2 people none of us knew, and one of whom who I think was pretty new to role-playing games. And that mostly went well. But one of the GM's friends was kind of a jackass. And I think some of it was him, but I think some of it was he had decided the character he was playing was a jackass. And in fact, because sort of when we wrapped up at the end, he made some comments, and we all jokingly responded in such a way that I think we almost, like, hurt his feelings. Because he said something about how the guy comes off as really intelligent, but he's really not. And me and a couple other people were like, don't worry, you totally didn't come off as though you were intelligent. And he seemed really... And I had a hard time figuring it out. And there were even arguments at the table that I think sort of blurred in and out of character, because there were arguments between him, his character, and a different one. And at one point, somebody's argument included the words role-playing game. And I'm like, wait, I think this may be... So that was a little bit weird. but in general, it was good. We played... It's a game called The Strange. And what it is, a few years ago, Monty Cook, who is a kind of famous guy in role-playing games, came out with a new game via Kickstarter called Numenera. It was very, very popular. The Strange is another game by him, same system as Numenera, different setting. And I have been thinking about Numenera as a possibility for my next game. So I was very curious to check out the setting. And what I discovered was I thought the Strange was a really interesting setting, and I'm probably going to steal a lot of stuff from it. And the system is terrible.
Really?
I really can't stand it. It's weirdly arbitrary, and it just has a lot of flaws to it. I don't like it at all. And what's weird is I'm like, I could run this exact same setting in the Fate system, and I think it would serve the setting better. Like, because that's the thing. Sometimes some systems are built to work in a particular setting or whatever. No, I think I could do better with a different system. So, and that was pretty much all I did there. I didn't buy any stuff or anything like that. The producer was gone that weekend, so I spent a lot of time at home eating terrible food.
Did you see Dave Avid there?
I did see him. I don't know that I actually got a chance to speak to him. I also saw Another guy who used to listen to the podcast doesn't anymore. I forget what his screen name used to be. I can't remember. But yeah, the Quad Cities guys, you know, Azure Talon and those guys. I didn't see Azure Talon there. But they were there running their usual grindhouse tournament thing with the tower and the Pathfinder characters and stuff. And it was in the Sheraton, which was nice. I haven't seen any movies recently. I did. My boss saw The Kingsman.
Mm-hmm.
That super secret agent looking thing going on. She saw it Monday night. Apparently it's not bad. It's a very, you know, action movie kind of vibe. I mean, it's you shouldn't get a lot out of it, I don't think. But it sounds like it's kind of fun. I'll be curious to check it out. It looks like all the stuff that I like about James Bond movies and all the stuff, none of the stuff I don't like about James Bond movies, which to be fair is most about James Bond movies, but keeping the secret agent gadget stuff and all that. And I was also intrigued because it totally looks like a appealing to teens kind of movie. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, it's young people doing James Bond stuff, but it's rated R, not PG-13. So it looked interesting, but yeah, so I'm giving a review that I heard from somebody else of a movie I haven't seen. And of course, the producer and I are preparing, because in a couple days we leave for our cruise down to Mexican Riviera.
Did you watch House of Cards this
week? Haven't watched House of Cards yet. Anyone? No, we haven't done that. Did I tell you we finished Constantine, actually, not just lying about it to the Nielsens?
No, I don't.
We did finish it. The last episode of the season was the first one I didn't like. I thought it was really poorly done. But other than an obligatory Shyamalanian twist at the very end, it did give me a little sense of closure.
In case it doesn't come back?
Yeah, which I'm hoping was on purpose. Because the whole thing is about fighting this supernatural evil that is growing everywhere and all this. And this one finally sort of caused our characters to consider the fact that even if they defeat that, they're still people, and people can totally be evil. Mm. And what does that mean? And, but it was really sloppily done. There's a lot of stuff that just didn't make sense. It was a mess, yeah.
That's too bad. Well,
none of the rest of the season was like that.
Well, so it might have been because they felt like they had to slap something together.
Threw some stuff together.
Yeah, like they didn't have a lot of... I mean, they wanted to give that closure like you're talking about, and it just didn't work.
Well, and just dumbass stuff. A recurring character that's quite popular in both the comics and the TV show showed up playing a role that was incredibly generic and would have made way more sense if it had just been a generic person. It was really weird that it was him doing the stuff he was doing.
Maybe it was a generic person before.
Yeah.
I thought, well, this might be our last chance to get this person into the thing.
So I wasn't super happy about that. I'm still playing Witcher 2, although I won't be for the near future because I'm not taking my computer with me. And there's no internet on a cruise ship. But I'll talk more about cruise stuff next week, a.k.a. in a half hour.
You will?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay.
I love talking about cruises. But I think that's all I got to say. Oh, winter has beaten me. I've given up.
I didn't know you were at war with winter.
I tend to suffer from a bit of seasonal affective disorder.
Oh, okay.
And it is noticeable in these last strains especially. And I found that. That's weird. You feel like, oh, when it's really cold. No, there's something about like January, February that starts to get people. The people I've known who really suffer from it, that seems to be... It's not when winter's here. It's when winter won't stop. And that's kind of what's been happening to me. And I had been sick a couple days last week, and that was not good. So I was really glad to get back to both the gym and the work on Monday. And I did that. And then Monday night, we had a bit of an ice storm.
Yeah, a little
bit. I'm guessing you're aware of.
Yep.
So I get up, and this is my week for it. I'm going to the gym all 5 days this week. I'm really going to do it because I haven't done it in a while. And Trish isn't here, but I can do it. And I get up, and I get dressed, and I go outside, and my car is just coated in ice.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I can't deal with this in shorts and a t-shirt and get to the gym. So I go back inside, and I'm just like, I'm going to, when it's about a half hour till I'm going to go to work, I'll go out and I'll start the car and let it warm up. You know, I've done this before. It works pretty good.
Yep.
So around that time, I go back outside. Car won't start.
Oh, no.
I can get into it. Car don't start. And it's been like this. We had this problem for a while with this other car. Trish is gone with the car we normally use. This is our backup car. It was working fine the day before. I said, I don't know. So I called the mechanic, and he's like, yeah, we probably won't have a chance to even look at it today. And so I gave up on... I called work and said, I'm just not going to be there today. I'll have to take a vacation day. Because I'm like, I don't even have it in me to try and figure it out. And honestly, I'm getting ready for the cruise, so I want to stay here and do laundry and stuff like that. Sure. And I've given up on going to the gym the rest of this week. And I've basically given up. I said on the trip, not going to be on Weight Watchers. Started that a couple days early because I started some pretty serious emotional eating. So, yeah, I'm just done. I'm like, winter wins. I'm just trying to survive till spring now. And really, I'm trying to survive till I get the hell out of here. I'm trying to survive till I get to San Diego. Just a couple more days. But I'm just done. At this point, I'm in survival mode. I'm like, whatever I got to do to make it through the next couple days and then go on my cruise. And then, and hopefully, y'all will have worked out this spring shit by the time I get back. Because I'm tired of this. Been a long ass winter. I don't even think it's been that long. It started late.
It did start late.
But it's really pushing it now, and it's been not happy.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you get two fairly significant snows, rather than say, you know, people can deal with, say, 5 3-inch snows rather than 2 8-inch snows reasonably close to each other.
Yep.
And then, like you said, an ice storm.
And the ice. Oh, the ice is killing.
And a cold snap that's supposed to be really cold tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can tend to really wear on a person.
But then starting Friday,
it's not bothering me.
Yeah, you're one of those people who likes winter.
Yes, I do.
I still claim, I may be lying, I don't know, that I like living somewhere that has winter. I like that there are four seasons. I feel that is significant, and I like the fact that that does impact me and that life is based on that around here and that we notice the passage of time via these things. Mm. I find that very heartwarming in sort of an existential way. But I fucking hate winter. I could totally do without it. I like that it's there, but I hate it.
Well, I'm sorry that's happening.
Yeah. But, yeah, just a couple more days here. We'll get the hell out of here. And part of it was also Trish was gone. Trish was on a... Trish just got back tonight, from a business trip.
Yeah.
And that was part of it, too. I was on my own. If she'd been here, would have been a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Well, we would have had the other car, but also it would have been a different thing anyway.
Right, right.
Anyway. Yeah, so, Hat...
Yep, let's...
People, you need to write in, all of you. Seriously, you're stealing from us if you listen without writing in. It's theft. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com.
This is signed by someone who calls themselves Coffee.
Coffee? How do you spell that?
Funny you should ask.
C-A-W-F-E-E. Oh, the French spelling.
Like, if you were...
Coffee.
If you were an extortionist crow, I guess.
Charging crows for making noise. Mm. Sorry, that's going to be a coffee.
Shut it. Do you see the thing that's going around the internet right now? This I think she's 4 years old or something. A young girl who crows in her neighborhood got used to her, like, getting in and out of her car, she would like drop food and so they would eat it. And eventually they started to bring her things.
Ooh.
They would bring her like little buttons they'd find or little just and leave them. She's got this little box of stuff that crows brought her. I mean, sometimes they bring her things that she can't keep, like
isn't this bits like of the animals and stuff. Movie Willard?
I don't know. It's a little bit. I find it really intriguing that the crows would do this. Do they give each other gifts? They probably do.
Oh.
They must.
Corvids in general kind of have a magpie tendency, and magpies are corvids, but I should say I know somebody who spells coffee that way as a nickname, so I'm pretty sure I know who this is.
No. Oh. Is this a new listener?
They didn't. Not exactly. Okay.
Well, thanks for thanks
they
for
chose writing. To use that pseudonym, so I'm not going to divulge shit.
Thanks for writing coffee. Allo, allo. What?
I believe that's pronounced allo, allo.
What are your thoughts on Russell Brand's book Revolution? Thanks. Well, I haven't read his book. However, I do subscribe to his YouTube channel.
Because I assume it's the novelization of the NBC science fiction show Revolution.
I subscribe to his YouTube channel because...
That's weird.
Sometimes... Well, he has this video blog kind of thing he calls The Trues.
Okay.
And sometimes he's got some interesting things to say. But interesting. I mean, people shouldn't make too much of it because I'm the kind of person that I subscribe to a lot of different news feeds and news this and news that. And maybe in particular things that I'm pretty sure I'm not going to agree with, just so I feel like I'm getting all aspects of the story.
William is basically the real life version of Jeff Goldblum's character in the first Jurassic Park movie. I'm not sure that even relates to what we're talking about. I just wanted to say
the problem with the news today is that it's all really short. And they've got to edit it quite a bit, which means usually the news organization or the reporter's bias is going to come into what facts they leave out and mm-hmm. what facts they put in. So if you want to get mm-hmm. all the facts, you either get some news sources that are going to be several pages long, whatever that means on the internet.
Or listen to Russell Brand.
Or you have to watch three or four different ones that are going to tell you things that are different. And I'm kind of interested by the whole Russell Brand thing. I'm kind of interested...
The whole brand?
Well,
the Russell Brand brand?
The whole thing with, I think the first thing that happened with him was that interview, right, where he told this guy that he doesn't vote, and the guy was trying to tell him, well, if you don't vote, how can you change things? And do you remember that? That went viral?
No.
That's how it started. He was being interviewed by someone who I'm pretty sure is famous in Britain. It would be like if someone was interviewed by, I don't know, Barbara Walters or Walter Cronkite here, I suppose. So forgive me, all of our British listeners, that I don't know. I don't remember this guy's name. But the video went viral of this interview they had where Russell Brand pointed out that he doesn't vote. And so the guy was challenging him about, well, how do you feel like you have a right to make comments about society if you're not participating in the political process, and everything
I'm with him there,
and everything Brand said in his response to this guy I thought was pretty interesting in terms of what his rationalization was and his justification. And since that happened, Brand's he's been interviewed a lot more about this kind of stuff. There's this book Revolution, which I haven't read, as I already said.
But are you familiar with it all? Is this just a memoir of his, or?
Well, I think, from what I understand, it's a book that's kind of a response to this whole thing. Like, okay, all right. Well, I'm gonna tell you what I think about the political stuff and why I don't vote and why I don't think anybody should vote and what I think you should do, and so on and so forth. He started a YouTube. I'm pretty sure this is the only thing on the channel I watch is this thing that he calls the Trues, True News, you know. And it's he's not really reporting the news so much as he's watching news or reading news, and then he's giving a commentary on it. But oftentimes he will bring in things that from other sources, and he'll cite sources even, and he'll give websites for you to visit if you want more information on stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I watch it and it doesn't really tell me anything that I didn't already know or that I think is particularly insightful, but sometimes he does. I mean, I also subscribe to RT TV's, their YouTube channel. Breaking the Set with Abby Martin, although that's not on anymore. That's kind of interesting. Al Jazeera, you know, all BBC.
Al Jazeera is one of my favorite guys. I love Al.
I find that a lot of the international news sources are more likely to say something that I give me information that I didn't know.
We used to feel that way amongst my friends frequently. It was like, the New York Times is reporting it. The Guardian's covering it. All right, then it's probably
well. True. And again, it's not that I think these news sources are better necessarily. It's just it's all about how you consume it, right? If you've got to take it with a grain of salt. And the fact is, when I see, sometimes I'll read things from MSNBC or Fox or CNN, and I am constantly amazed by how anemic that reporting is. Like, I still don't feel like I know what happened here or who was all involved or what the stakes are or anything. And usually if I go to a source that's not...
They hate our freedom. That's the important thing you need to
usually
do.
If I go to a source that's not American, I get better information. So anyway, I don't know why I got into that.
North Korean news is a little biased.
I'm not going to read Revolution, I don't think, but I
would imagine I'm not either.
I think I would think it was interesting because...
Yeah, you don't read books.
Obviously, I'm watching his YouTube channels, and I think it sometimes is interesting.
I have never... And I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm not saying it's not even a pretty significant thing, potentially. My experience, I have never witnessed what I believe to be a sincere moment from Russell Brand. So I don't really know what to think of him. He's funny sometimes. He's super not funny sometimes when he's trying to be funny. I have seen him say interesting things. They appear to be on par with the most interesting things I heard from friends who were high in college and philosophizing, which is every once in a while you can get a glimmer out of that. And same thing here. I am hesitant because I do feel there is developing a weird cult of personality around him. And it doesn't, what I see doesn't impress me. But there are people like you who pay attention, and like Coffee for that matter, who pay attention, who I don't consider to be the type to succumb to such a thing. So it makes me think there's something there.
Well, that's probably something else I should point out is I'm not a fan of his. I mean, I would never, I shouldn't say never. If there's a film with Russell Brand in it, that actually makes it less likely that I'm going to go see it.
Yeah.
What interests me...
I watched a couple episodes of his very short-lived TV show.
First of all...
was not interested.
I think he is, by and large, pretty well-spoken. And I think what fascinates me most, from the very beginning when he had this interview with this guy, was how... He very clearly knows his own mind, which I'm finding is a pretty rare thing. When you get popular newscasters talking about things that happened that didn't even really happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty, that tells you where the world is and whether you agree with this guy, whether you like him, whether you respect his body of work or whatever, he knows he's not speaking to just impress people. He's not just making stuff up as he goes along, really. I mean, he knows what he thinks and he's frank about it. He knows what he doesn't try to assert things that he doesn't know anything about, because he's very frank about that. I don't know anything about this topic, topic.
Yeah.
He's very honest, but I think articulate, and it fascinates me that what he had to say is something that resonated with so many people in terms of looking at the world as it's organized and being so disappointed and so disillusioned with it that dropping out of it in some ways, not in all ways, but in ways like voting and things like that, is not just something to do because you're apathetic, but something to do because you think your time would be better spent doing something else. That's interesting.
And it's, well, that's interesting. Every generation has their variant of punk rock, and that's sort of
the vibe. Yeah, there. I suppose. But but that's, you know, and in the interview, the guy was saying, well, what would you do? What would work better than what we've got now? And, you know, he said things like, well, I'm a comedian. It's not really my job to come up with this, but I can see when something's not working and when it looks like a waste of time for me to do this thing. And why should I waste my time doing this when I could do this other thing instead that I think is actually going to have an impact? And, you know, I thought that was very interesting. Both that what he was saying I thought was interesting, but more than that, for me, it was how people were responding to it.
Yeah.
So I watch, you know, his videos have titles like all videos do, and if it's a topic that's going to interest me, I watch it, and if it's not, I don't. But I appreciate his, to me, he comes off as being very sincere and not self-aggrandizing or anything at all, just, hey, this is what I see. This is what I think. I think this is a lie because of this, you know, and things like that. And I'm kind of trying to keep an eye on how other people are responding to it. Cause again, that's my larger interest there, I think. But, I think the book, I don't know how successful it's been. I don't know if it's like a bestseller or something.
No clue.
Have you heard?
No.
Coffee, if you want to
give, who knows how old that question is. So,
well, okay, but if you want to give your own insight into the book, its contents, and or its popularity,
go to the blog.
Yeah, that would be great.
TheMagicalTalkingHat.com.
I'd like to know your own thoughts. Again, I don't think I'll read it because I'm not that interested in specifically Russell Brand's personal philosophy. Yeah. I'm more interested in this whole kind of phenomenon that is him having a YouTube channel and being a cultural, having a cultural impact politically that I think is, it, whether it's misguided or not, it is very sincere, and I think it's very well articulated.
I think a lot of the way a lot of people seem to feel about Russell Brand is basically the way I feel about Craig Ferguson. But Craig Ferguson is far less political. But I feel the same sincerity and sort of openness and autodidacticism that people seem to attribute to Russell Brand. I feel that with Craig Ferguson. And I did buy his book on audio and listened to it and loved it to death. Yeah, I don't know. It might be a good audible.
You said it made you feel proud to be an American.
A little bit, which is weird for me. Yeah. If Audible has the audio version of this book read by Russell Brand, I might check that out.
Well, could be interesting. If you do, let me know because, I have a feeling you'll, I seriously doubt you'll agree with everything, but I think you might find it interesting. Another thing that I find interesting about the whole phenomena with him doing this is, you know, he's mostly considered a comedian, right? But didn't he get his start on like reality TV or something?
I have no idea. The first time I ever saw him or heard of him is he plays a character in Forgetting Sarah Marshall that was popular enough that he essentially got his own movie where he played the same character in a movie called Get Him to the Greek.
Then
he hooked up with Katy Perry and the rest is history.
The first time I heard of him, didn't he get the lead in the remake of Arthur or something?
Oh, yes, he did get that.
Okay, that's the first time I ever heard of him.
Which
I didn't watch. I never seen the original really Arthur, did. Actually.
And it seems like a very different story. The place I most remember actually seeing him act is that weird ass version of The Tempest with Helen Mirren as a female Prospero. It was done by the same crazy woman who came up with Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. Julie Traynor or something. She did this version of The Tempest with a really impressive cast and really impressive effects and not much else going on. And he was one of the two. He and Alfred Molina did the clown bits. And they did pretty well for what it was. But also, Jimon Hounsou played Caliban and the only black person in the cast. And it was really awkward.
Well, what I was going to say was that I think that it's interesting that, I don't know, I always like it when someone who most people are not going to take seriously because of what they're known for, right?
Uh-huh.
Whatever it is they're known for, usually if it's comedy or they had some accidental 15 minutes of fame or whatever. But when given a chance to actually articulate their views about things, they do a pretty good job. I mean, they surprise everybody at how, you know.
If he's being sincere, I'm all for it. All I have ever seen is the sort of cool, funny bad boy who still looks like he's on drugs, although he famously is now clean and sober because he had drug problems.
Yeah.
And is just, oh, aren't I crazy? And what, like, that's what I see. And it all seems very cultivated. And I find it feels disingenuous, and I don't particularly into it. If he's being sincere and he's really putting his stuff out there, and I mean, that's what you do when you get in that position. You become rich and famous. Use it for what you want to use it for.
Well, I mean, that's another thing. He often makes reference to his own privilege, you know, and how he's in a privileged position compared to other people, and that gives him a unique obligation, really, to do certain things when he can. And I don't know.
And that's a sentiment I can get behind.
Like I say, I'm not a fan of his work. I'm not likely going to read his book because, again, I don't really care so much about his personal philosophy.
Yeah.
But I respect what he's doing, and I think he's very well spoken, and I do agree with some of the things he has to say, obviously. I'm sure, even though I'm not interested in reading the book, if someone told me, oh, this is a really fascinating, interesting book, I would totally believe that it is.
Oh, okay. That's not how I thought you were going to end that sentence. And I was about to call bullshit on you.
But a lot of other people would say, no, Russell Brand, it couldn't be any good.
But I thought you said, if somebody comes to me and said, this is a really impressive book, I might read it. And I was going to be like, no, you will not.
No, I'll just believe it.
You'll believe it.
Yeah. I'll believe they think so.
I believe... I have all but, like, gotten on my knees and begged you to read books, and you wouldn't do it.
I read books all the time.
Yeah, not any ones that people want you to.
Well, that's not entirely true.
In the corner with the Necronomicon and shit.
That's not entirely true. I mean, I think I read American Gods because someone asked me to. I read Sandman because you asked me to, I'm pretty sure.
Did you read that whole series?
I now own the whole series somehow.
Nice.
I don't remember how I got it. You didn't buy it for me, did you?
I don't think... No, but I might have bought you the first one.
Oh, maybe.
I use that as gateway drugs.
Maybe. And I read the whole thing. I have the whole
exactly series. Halfway through Ex Machina now. Still enjoying that. Coffee, if that is who I think it is, I'm currently lending her Lucifer to read through.
Aren't there some new Lucifer stuff?
No, there's new Sandman.
Well, I thought on Google Plus, I subscribed to the DC feed, and they were showing.
Oh, you're right.
A new,
somebody's doing something. Title. I think somebody put the character in something. I don't know that it's an actual new title for Lucifer.
Well, what I saw was a cover for like a new story. Huh. Lucifer. That it was. I mean,
that would be weird.
I mean, maybe I'm pretty sure I saw it was a cover for a new story.
Old?
No, I don't. I think that the whole point of the post was to say this is a new story.
I'll have to look it up then. It is Google Plus though, so it doesn't have any basis in reality.
It's always possible I could be wrong. We all know that, but I'm pretty sure that's
what
it was.
Did you already tell me about the Simpsons episode?
That was so bizarre.
And it was entirely your fault.
We don't need to tell people about that again. I'm sure we've talked about
we've
it.
We've talked
least,
about that
least
many,
twice.
Many times.
At least twice.
I was trying to get Ezzy to make noise. Oh, I'm going to try and take a picture, though, because part of our flight to get to San Diego, we have a quite long layover in Denver Airport. So I'll try and get photos of the gift shop.
Oh, yeah, right.
Hat. Yeah.
Boy, I almost forgot about that.
Yeah. So we'll check that out.
Should we draw another one?
We got time. We got to wrap this up, and then we'll have to draw one later. All right, here we go, people. We're going to leave. Just for a few minutes, but for you it'll seem like a week. It's due to relative speeds. We're traveling at the speed of light or near to it, and you guys are not. And so, from a relative perspective, it looks like and sounds like we're going to be gone a week. But to us, it's only a few minutes.
Yeah, only.
And you all look so old to us now. If you want to tell us how wrong we were, and you know you do, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us all about it. And tell us other stuff. Tell us whatever, you know? Stories about your kids, recipes, jokes about Ryan Gosling, whatever. Also, write the hat with stuff that you want us to talk about. themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We need it to survive, people. Do it. And also, sit right there, wait for a week, and we'll be right back.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.